What if, for a limited time, the federal government changed its tax codes to give struggling families a break? Well, that's exactly what's happened, and could you benefit? Also, did people sense the economy was going south long before the numbers showed that? For more, we've got economist Julianne Malveaux, who's also the president of Bennett College. Welcome.
Hi, Fry. How are you?
I am doing great, but consumer confidence, not so much. It's at its lowest level since the early 1990s. What exactly does that mean?
The Conference Board surveys consumers about what they think is going to happen, about how confident they are. It's important because consumer confidence determines lots of discretionary spending. In other words, if you can buy a car this year or next year and you think the economy is going to turn down or you're worried about your job, you're going to postpone that car purchase. Well, that's a great decision for the Chidea residents, but it might not be for the economy if it's multiplied by thousands or tens of thousands. So people predicate their spending on what they think is going to happen into the economy. It doesn't affect our spending on things like food or things we have no discretion over, gasoline perhaps if you have to commute with your car, other kinds of things. But there are some things that you'll make decisions. I'm not going to do this now. Some people are holding back from the housing market, although this is a particularly good time to get in because interest rates are low and because the market is troubled. But some younger people are holding back because they're not so sure what their jobs are going to be like. So when consumer confidence is down, you can expect that spenders are withholding some of their spending.
There's also signs that the cost of imported goods are rising. Is that because of gasoline prices, or what's driving that?
That's somewhat a function of the weakness of the dollar. We've seen all kinds of signs of the dollar's weakening, from us pulling level with the Canadian dollar to our relationship to the euro. When the dollar is weaker, imported goods, which are purchased with foreign currency, become more expensive. That's troubling for us as well, because for the longest times we were able to use globalization to, at some level, secure our economy. But as these goods, you hear the cliches about cheap imports. Well, if they're not so cheap, we're less likely to buy them.
When it comes to really looking at the big picture of how people interact with their habits, their desires, it seems like a lot of people were edgy way before all these government numbers started popping up. Do we sense things even before there's evidence?
Oh, absolutely, Farai. The thing about the government numbers is that they're macroeconomic numbers. We're measuring the entirety of the economy. And as I've always pointed out, our economy is somewhat bifurcated. You have two kinds of jobs in America. You've got some people who have great jobs, they have health insurance, they have all that stuff. They're somewhat insulated from extreme economic oscillations. And then you have, for want of a better word, the part-time worker, the fast food worker, the temporary worker, who has no security of employment. Now, that lack of security of employment is not problematic in good times. We all know consultants who have more work than they can even do. But we know that there are also people who've seen their hours cut, who've seen their days cut, who perhaps have seen their copay go up if they do happen to have benefits. You have some people at the bottom half of the economic spectrum who actually have access to health care, but they can't afford it because the copay or the premium is so high. And so these are the people who've been saying all along, I'm not feeling this economy. There's something wrong with this economy. We haven't been paying attention, or some policymakers haven't been paying attention, because we've seen GDP growth, we've seen economic growth, we've seen the signs, the macroeconomic signs. But now, Farai, we're seeing that those people who might have been called the canary in the minefield is the term that Lonnie Guinier uses when she talks in her book about civil rights. Well, poor people, people in the hood, and lots of other people are the canaries in our nation's economic minefield.
Well, Dr. Malveaux, we're going to have to stop here, but you're going to stick with me through the break. And we're with Julianne Malveaux talking about changes in the tax code that could help struggling families. Also on our bloggers roundtable, Tavis Smiley feels snubbed by Obama, and another discussion of street lit. I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. We're back with more on the economy and personal finance, and we're turning to the tax code, of all places, for some good news. We're with Julianne Malveaux, an economist and president of Bennett College. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So there's actually some good tax news. I mean, everybody usually, when you hear taxes, you start running for the hills. This year, you might get a benefit or more than one. First up, taxes on people whose homes are being foreclosed on for 2007 through 2009 tax years. They won't pay tax on any profits. Previously, they had to pay the taxes even if they lost their home. So explain this to me. People who lost their homes to foreclosure had to pay tax on the property they lost?
Absolutely. If your house, if you paid $100,000 for your house, you were able to sell it even in foreclosure at $250,000, there was $150,000 worth of capital gains tax that you had to pay. Of course, it depended on how long you were in the home. If you were there for, I believe it's 2.5 of the last 5 years, you might have been exempt. But if this was something recent, you wouldn't be. So you would indeed have to pay that. This is a good thing, Farai, but it's not something that's going to affect lots of people. And so while we celebrate the fact that there is some flexibility in the tax code for homeowners who are disgruntled and who have had a hard time and who are being foreclosed on, when we count up the numbers, I would argue that what I'd rather see, especially for people at the bottom, would simply be a rate change, a downward rate change, perhaps more tax credits. For folk who have children in school, of course, I'm speaking to my constituency, perhaps some tuition credits like the ones that Obama talked about when he was recently in Wisconsin. So while I think taxpayers appreciate every little bit, and there are lots of little things here, some forms that weren't made available actually until last week, Wednesday or Thursday, I think the 10th, for people who had education credits to claim and energy tax credits, some child care credits. So we do see the policymakers certainly and the White House thinking ahead. I would argue too little for too few at the bottom.
All right. There's also another move that has to do with the Federal Housing Administration. In states like California, New York, municipal areas in a lot of states, the average price of buying a home makes it hard for people to use federal mortgage programs or housing insurance. Now, just through the end of 2008, the Federal Housing Administration will allow borrowers to get up to $729,000 in mortgage money. That's hundreds of thousands of dollars more than they would have gotten in the past. So how are these new changes going to work? Who's it going to help?
Again, who has a $729,000 home? While I think it's fair to say that people in New York City, parts of California, Los Angeles, the Bay Area, Chicago, other major markets should not be subject to the minimums of before, which were around $250,000, quite low. I know what you could buy in New York City, for example, for $250,000, and let's not speculate. But $729,000 is a pretty high bar. So again, I think that this is playing to the middle and not to the bottom. Certainly the middle class needs some relief. This is a good program, but it is not sufficient to bring relief to the folk at the bottom. To the extent that these tax code modifications are seen as providing some relief in the face of the impending recession and in the weakness in the housing market, again, I say that there are some challenges. The other challenge for Rye is to note that probably 30% of all white families and half of all African-American families are not owners. They're renters. These are people who pay high prices, often subsidizing a mortgage payer, and there's nothing in this code for them. There are people who, throughout their entire lifetime, are not able to put together the money to own a home. But they're struggling, too, and there's nothing there for them.
What about the other issues of deducting mortgage insurance for the first time? That deduction could mean up to $1,000. Is that going to help people who are more working folks, or is that something else that's going to target higher income homeowners?
I think that that's one of the best provisions there, because the private mortgage insurance that is required for people who don't come in with 20% often has a very crippling effect on young families, new families with mortgages. And so this is some very welcome relief. Again, I think that there's got to be a renter's caucus out there somewhere to help that people who are renting. But this is one of the things that I've seen that I think I feel is indeed more broad-based relief and will help some people who are attempting to get into the market. Now, as I mentioned earlier in the previous segment, lots of people are holding back from the market because of consumer confidence. Although $1,000 doesn't seem like a lot of money, when you're buying a house, every little bit helps.
Now, there's also been some issues that affect people like these issues that could also stimulate the economy. One estimate said that the new limits that we're talking about, the new loan limits, could result in 300,000 additional home sales and strengthen current home prices by 2 to 3%. What do you make of that?
I think that's absolutely true. To the extent that people who don't have federal guarantees still want to get into the market, they face paying higher prices, they face more challenges. So to the extent that the feds will get in and guarantee a higher home price, more loan money, I think that's good. The challenge for Rye is when you look at the tax bill, there are a certain amount of taxes that have to be paid. There are certain expenditures, even if we throw away the ones we could all fuss about, war, et cetera. But there are certain things that we're going to have to pay for. Every time you make an exemption or a deduction, it means that those things still have to be paid for, but you're spreading the pie around differently. And so while I celebrate the fact that 300,000 more people might be able to get into homes, I also worry about the people at the bottom for whom home ownership is still a very distant dream. Subsidizing one really takes away from the other. We don't tend to look at it that way. We try to incent certain kinds of behavior with various kinds of tax breaks, but we ignore the fact that you still have people who have to shoulder that burden.
So what would you say would be a good solution or a good aid to people who are not homeowners, aren't going to be within the 2008 calendar year? What would help them the most coming from the government? Julianne? All right. It appears we're having a little bit of... Yes. Hi, Julianne. I was just asking you, what do you think will help people who are not homeowners? All right. It appears we're having some technical difficulties with Dr. Julianne Malveaux. We want to thank you for joining us. Julianne Malveaux is an economist and president of Bennett College, and she joined us from WFDD in Greensboro, North Carolina.